kids would be pulled from class to go eat. I remember it's like in math time, there would be kids who were pulled because they had to go eat breakfast because they didn't have it at home. During recess, I figured out later in like first, second grade that teachers were putting parcels of like bags of food in kids' backpacks during recess because they had to take that home on the weekends or they wouldn't eat. And for me, like for me, when I was realizing this, I was like, it didn't feel right. Because something so basic and fundamental as food, I feel should be guaranteed to all of them. And those of us who do have it, I believe have a responsibility to help those who don't. And that's really where my passion for all got started.
Welcome to the Philanthropy Masterminds podcast, brought to you by DonorSearch, the show that takes you inside the lives of thought leaders, innovators, and changemakers in fundraising, philanthropy, and civil society. I'm your host, Jay Frost. In this episode, we speak with William Cabanis, a high school student from Knoxville, Tennessee, and founder of Vanilla Feeds Tomorrow. William has been honored with a 2024 William R. Sims Award for Outstanding Youth in Philanthropy, sponsored by Carter, through the AFP Foundation for Philanthropy. Recognized for his dedication to combating hunger and food insecurity, William's nonprofit sells homemade vanilla extract and donates the proceeds to Second Harvest Food Bank of East Tennessee. His efforts have provided over 630,000 meals to date. We caught up with William at AFP Icon in Toronto.
So congratulations on winning this award, first of all.
Thank you.
It's great.
Thank you.
And I know you're going to tell a bit of your story in a little bit, but for those who aren't here or would like to learn more, can you just introduce a little bit about your work and your organization?
Of course. William Cabanis. I'm 18 years old from Tennessee, and I'm the founder and CEO of Vanilla Feeds Tomorrow. I make and sell homemade pure vanilla extract and donate all the profits to Second Harvest. They're my local food bank, and they are able to turn those monetary donations into meals for those in need in my community.
Okay. And so how did this whole thing start?
Really from where I was born, where I was raised. I'm from a small town in East Tennessee where food insecurity and hunger is a real issue. About 95% of students at my elementary school were food insecure and depended upon different programs such as school breakfast, school lunches, and backpack programs through food banks to survive and meet their basic needs.
75%?
95%, yes sir. So seeing that at a young age, I've had a passion to help those in need because from kindergarten, it wasn't right to me to be able to sit in class and someone doesn't have the same luxury that I have. So from a young age, my passion has been how can I help others in this regard? So I started by doing, I volunteer at soup kitchens, donate my favorite fruit bananas to food pantries, and tried to help in whatever way I could. But it really all got started in 2020. That's when I was an eighth grader in the United States, and that's when I really started to develop the ability to have empathy for others, like fully cognizantly understand that. And that I was sitting at home, I remember during the stay-at-home orders of COVID-19, and I was seeing what was happening around our world and around my community. I mean, millions of people lost their jobs and were furloughed. And it's not right to me that someone who is perfectly financially secure, able to feed their families and support themselves, is now in a position where they are dependent upon a very stressed system of food banks. So I still had the luxuries I had before of being able to go home to food. And now I had the time to do something. So the only thing I felt like I could do was do something. So my response to that was to found Vanilla Feeds Tomorrow. And since then, over the last 4 years, it's been my response to helping this problem and trying to subdue and help those who have what I believe everyone should.
A couple of things before we move too deeply into that. Mm-hmm. You talked about some awareness of this from the time you were really very young in school. 95% of people around you on, it sounds like free and reduced lunch is the way we think about it back where I live.
Yes.
How aware were you of it at that time, as a kid sitting down in the lunchroom with the other kids?
Yes. Kids would be pulled from class to go eat. I remember it's like in math time, there would be kids who were pulled because they had to go eat breakfast because they didn't have it at home. During recess, I figured out later in like first, second grade that teachers were putting parcels of like bags of food in kids' backpacks during recess because they had to take that home on the weekends or they wouldn't eat. And for me, for me, when I was realizing this, I was like, it didn't feel right. Because something so basic and fundamental as food, I feel should be guaranteed to all of them. And those of us who do have it, I believe have a responsibility to help those who don't. And that's really where my passion for all got started.
Now, I know that probably as you continue to think about that and think about what to do about it, especially during COVID, that was your project, I'm sure enabled or supported by others. But when you were, again, just beginning to get aware of this as a younger person, what kind of conversations do you have to understand it? Because if I were, let's say, 7 years old, and I saw a friend didn't have food or had to have their backpack packed for the weekend, I would have no idea what that meant. You know, I wouldn't be able to process it. How did you begin to understand or talk about it with people? How did you gain knowledge?
Gain knowledge through conversations with those who were affected, like with friends who would go to lunch and they wouldn't have food in the lunchbox. And I remember going and talking to my parents about that, and I was telling them, and they had to explain to me why some kids didn't have food and how they had to deal with their struggles and deal with that adversity. So that's what I really understand, was conversations with those who struggle with it, and also with people like my parents and grandparents. And they were the ones who were able to help guide me and say, hey, if you want to help this, this is how you can do it. You can go volunteer at the soup kitchen. My grandma's church had a great one. It's like, you can go help there and help feed people. If you want to donate some of your allowance to a food pantry, this is how you can help. And that's really how I started getting into that thing, that sphere of taking my passion into activism.
So COVID comes around.
Yes.
A lot of us probably were trying to figure out what to make of it.
Yes.
I mean, it was protecting ourselves as well as thinking about others and our friends. You probably couldn't interact much with friends, at least initially during that, during the lockdowns. So you thought about this, and then you thought, well, I'm going to do what I can to help. How did you process how you're going to get access to materials or resources, whether they're financial or food, and get that to the people when most of us were having trouble figuring out how to go to the grocery store or if we could, you know, receive food at our homes?
Yes. It was an interesting time. So I believe it was, at least where I lived in Tennessee, we didn't have our lockdowns on our first stay at home orders until March of 2020. And it wasn't until about April when I really started getting behind this idea of there's something that needs to be done, and I have the ability to do that. So I remember how it all came about is I was getting back and watching the news, as we all were, trying to figure out what was happening and how are we going to do different things. That's when I really started learning about what was happening, about people lining up for the mile-long food banks, mile-long car lines of food banks.
Right.
That's when I really saw the scale of the issue and understood that it was an issue that needed to be tackled. And listening to the news, one of the biggest things that food banks were stressing is they wanted monetary donations. They had the supplies, they had the infrastructure already built, they just needed additional donations to support and increase the effort that they were already sustaining. So my biggest thing was, how do I fundraise? How do I do this? And one of the things I've always been passionate about is vanilla extract. I've always loved baking, and I've loved how good vanilla extract can make your baked goods so much better. So for me, I also go back into baking during quarantine with my sister and family, just making new things. And there was one night in particular, I remember I was making a batch of my homemade vanilla brownies, and as I poured the vanilla extract in, that's what hit me, that this is a unique way that I can help those in need, is by selling vanilla extract, because everyone in my community was getting back into baking and needed vanilla, and it was also something I was passionate about, and I knew that if I wanted to do something, I needed to be fully invested in it. So from that point on, I think for the rest of April and May, building nonprofit from the ground up, figuring out how I was going to, you know, get materials imported from Madagascar to the United States, how I was going to get shipping terms, all these different things of how I can make the most sustainable effort possible.
Yeah.
Because from the beginning, my goal was always to make the biggest difference I could. I didn't know if I would survive a month, I didn't know if I'd survive a year, but I just wanted this effort to be as well put together as I could have it and make the biggest difference I could.
I'm just laughing because I don't know where my vanilla comes from. And for those who are listening and thinking about this and don't bake, actually vanilla is a really big deal.
Yes.
So you may not be trying to make something that tastes like vanilla ice cream, but if you make anything with baking, like banana bread, you made a lot of that during the pandemic, you need your teaspoon of
vanilla
or else that it just, you don't want to eat that. So that's a kind of a big deal. But then to source it or to figure out how to source it, that's another level.
Yes.
Okay, so then there's the fundraising. Now, we're at a conference filled with fundraisers who are trying to figure out how to do it. How did you figure out how to do it? I mean, raising money is a distinct skill set. How did you access that? How did you apply it?
Of course. It's a great question. One thing I had on my side is childhood ignorance. I was 14 years old and I didn't understand challenges. So I leapt headfirst in. I didn't know what I was doing. I had to figure out a lot of what I was doing off Google. I had to just research night and day, figure out how do I do this and what do other people do. So I remember I started really small. I originally didn't know if I was going to make a full-fledged 501c3 nonprofit, but that's the direction I ended up taking because for a variety of reasons. And one thing that was really helpful was my dad. He's a CPA in the United States, and he was able to help guide me. How do we set up a 501c3 so the IRS complies with us, and how do we do this? And I remember I was looking at different other private producers of vanilla extract and seeing how do they source. Like, I mean, people buy their vanilla beans from Mexico, Madagascar, other regions of the U.S. sometimes. And it was really just learning as I go on, just figuring out and getting hit with failures. And that was good because I learned from those and was able to take a new direction. And ultimately, because of all those failures and all those setbacks, it allowed us to be where we are today. And
it was
a long and slow process, but eventually we got to a point where we were able to be self-sustaining and be able to make the difference we've had.
I know that money is only one measure of the impact that you're having, but how much have you raised?
We donated over $210,000 to Second Harvest in the last almost 4 years now, and that's equated to over 630,000 meals for East Tennesseans.
Yeah, which is phenomenal. There are a couple of choices you made in there. One you just alluded to, which is whether or not to set up a separate 501c3. And there are, as you said, there are a number of reasons, but what was the biggest reason?
For me, it came down to salary. Do I take anything from this? So I set up a 501c3 because the original mission for this was to make the biggest difference I could. It wasn't so I could make a profit or so I could have a summer job. It was so that I could help others. So the best way I feel I could do that was to set up an official nonprofit. And still to this day, no one has taken a single penny from. I haven't made a penny from Penelope's Tomorrow. We use entirely volunteer labor, and it's all meant to help those in need. And that was from where I was then 4 years and where I am today, it was the most logical choice.
And then the other part is about choosing a partner. This is also another thing that's very challenging.
Yes.
There are a lot of people out there who are trying to serve those who are hungry.
Yes.
How did you pick your partner?
Great question. So again, I did research my area. I figured out who was serving those in need and helping fight hunger. And as I looked into it more and more, the best option for me was Second Harvest in East Tennessee because they serve my current residents in Knoxville, my hometown of Crossville, where I'm from. And it was important to me to serve both regions equally. But also because of their scale and their connection with Feeding America, they are able to have one of the biggest impacts that I can donate to. Every dollar you donate is three meals, and they're able, because of the infrastructure they've built over 40 years. So also, I had volunteered with them previously, and I got to know a couple of the directors and leaders at the food bank, and I trusted that they would be able to do with the funds as they said they would. They weren't just going to pocket it all and turn me away, which is what I was worried about originally, but I've been able to work with them to help make a difference, and I'm very blessed to have such a great partnership.
It sounds like not knowing things but being eager to learn them was a huge advantage in founding an organization and then finding a partner and then getting food where food needed to go. What are a couple of things that maybe you wish you could have done differently so far, and what are the things you're looking forward to doing that maybe you haven't had a chance to do yet?
Okay. I think I'm going to backtrack previously. There's not much I wish I would have done differently. Failed a lot. A lot of things I could have done better originally, but I grew from them as a result. And I think because of that, I don't really want to change anything that I've done previously, because I don't know where we would be today if we didn't have some of those failures and some of those motivations. So I don't know what I would change, but going forward, I am looking forward to our secondhand impact, because one thing I've especially pivoted to now in like the last 2 years is realizing that Vanellope's Tomorrow alone is incredible. And I'm very proud of the work that it's been able to do and how we've been able to help. But I also want to inspire others to make a difference, because if we're all able to contribute on our own interest, who knows what world we can live in tomorrow. My passion is helping feed the hungry and baking with vanilla extracts. And I've been able to use that to help make a difference. I didn't know how great it would be. I didn't know if I would help one person, a million. I don't know. And I don't know where we'll go in the future. But I want to see if I'm able to help play a small part in someone else's story. If someone else is able to take some inspiration or decide to take that first step and then do their own thing that surpasses us all, that would be the best legacy of Nothing's Tomorrow. And that's what I'm looking forward to, is seeing how many people will continue to do things like this and the nature of Nothing's Tomorrow. And yeah, that's my next goal, is because we all have our own passions, right? I mean, not everyone's passionate about feeding the hungry, and that's okay. Some people will love conservation and recycling or other issues in our world. And I mean, if we all tackle our own unique issue, I mean, who knows? Who knows how good this place would be to live?
Now, I know that what you're doing will and should inspire a lot of people to take action where they live, but also, you know, within these organizations to do things maybe they wouldn't have tried before.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious to know if you can talk about it.
Of course.
Maybe how your peers have responded. Because you were doing this and I'm sure also trying to go to school and do all the other things that we do. Mm-hmm. So what has that been like as you hang out with friends, talk to people?
Yeah.
Have you seen a kind of a change in the way they have perceived this kind of work and its importance, maybe inspired them to find their own passions and pursue them?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm still a full-time high school student. I have been for the mostly the duration of this project.
This is what year now are you?
I'm a senior. Senior in a few months. It's definitely been a change. And I think one thing, like especially with my close friends, is they've become a lot more supportive of this idea of making a difference in volunteering. And one thing I'm especially grateful for is how much they've supported me with Vanellope's Tomorrow. Because there have been times where I've been stressed and overwhelmed with high demand and orders, and they've willingly stepped in to help me.
Right.
And that's one thing I'm very grateful for, is their support and saying, William, we understand what you're doing. We want to help. And definitely, I think this is also a great thing that I think that will inspire them in the future to continue to help those in need.
Yeah, I didn't even ask you if you have partners in this. It sounds like it's pretty much been a solo effort so far.
Yes, sir. I still make everything under my own house, in my own kitchen. It's all in-house to cut costs and allow us to make a bigger impact. Yeah, it's me, my dad's our financial guy for obvious reasons. it's all volunteer effort. It's just still in-house. I'm very proud of that.
Yeah, if I were talking to you in 40 years, one of the questions I might ask is, how do your parents feel about this? What do you think your parents would say? But you live it every day, and I know you're looking forward. That's why I asked a bit about your peers, to see what impact is there. But I know also that the work that we do, the work that you're doing, has an impact, big impact on our community, including both the people who are receiving the meals, but maybe more broadly, as people think about what they can do. Have you had conversations with others in the community that you think are emblematic of helping people to understand that they can take on an issue and pursue it with passion the same way that you have?
Yes. One thing also I've learned to do is public speaking. I've had more and more opportunities to do that. And I've, as a result, I've been able to connect with members of my community, of not only Knoxville, but also of Tennessee and larger abroad. And it has been really inspiring to me, because one thing I didn't know is how Vanellope's Meat Tomorrow would be received originally. I didn't know if we would be supported, hated. Who knows? Who knows what would happen? And one thing I'm grateful for is how total strangers have been completely supportive and encouraged this initiative. And I've seen the same response when I've gone and met with people who maybe were just getting started with a local community service group, or they had been in the space for 20, 30 years. It's been really great to see how many people approve of this work and have said that they want to do something similar. And there's no better feeling than that, and knowing that you've made a difference and you've helped someone in need. So, yes.
So what's next? I mean, this is your senior year.
Yes, sir.
Do you already have a plan for what's next?
Yes, for the most part. Not a total plan, but I have a plan in place. So I will go to college next semester. I don't know where that's going to be. I'm still trying to figure that out myself. But Vanellope's Tomorrow will continue. I'm hoping to take it with me to college and continue to do it as a club there and continue to help those in my area. But if not, if that's not feasible, it'll continue in Knoxville. I know there are several people in place that I would trust to continue to run the organization and continue to grow and expand it. So I may not know how it's going to continue. I know that it will continue, because the need still exists, and the pre-2020 hunger metrics are not where they were originally. They haven't gone back down to normalcy. So there is a need that Vanellope's Tomorrow continue to address, and the best way to do it is through fundraising and monetary donations. So the best way to continue to fight this issue that I'm passionate about is through Vanellope's Tomorrow. So it wouldn't feel right to close or to end it with such a pressing need.
Right. And for those who are listening, you did put normalcy in quotes, which I appreciate, because I know that the fights we fight are not something that's just before and after COVID. The things you're addressing, you recognized first when you were probably 6 or 7 years old and you decided to do something about it. So now I'll ask you the question I never have a chance to ask anyone.
Okay.
What is your favorite recipe?
Oh, okay.
Because you spent time thinking about this a lot, actually.
It's true. I mean...
And can you share it, or is it a secret?
I mean, I have to keep a little bit of secrecy here, but I think my favorite recipe... I love brownies. I'm a big brownie guy. I love chocolates. And I think my vanilla brownies are still my favorite to make.
Right.
Easy. And it's just something unique that I was able to create.
All right. Well, I'll trust you on that. But I think that people probably can... either get your recipe or get your brownies or at least support the work that you're doing. So how can people do that?
Of course. So I sell homemade pure vanilla extract. I ship it anywhere in the United States. I sell an 8-ounce bottle for $30 and I sell a 2-ounce bottle seasonally. Also, anyone around the world, no matter what country they're in, can do monetary donations. Every dollar donated is 3 meals and goes directly to Second Harvest. And those are the best ways to monetarily support me. But also, I strongly encourage people who are interested in taking a further step to volunteer at a local food bank or food pantry, wherever they are, because helping to cut an organization's labor costs allows them to help have a greater impact. So that will be the biggest way to make a larger impact than you and I here today.
Thank you so much for all this. Really appreciate it, Will, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for this episode of the Philanthropy Masterminds podcast. If you'd like to learn more about William's work and support his efforts, go to vanillafeedstomorrow.com. Our thanks to our sponsor, DonorSearch, the world leader in fundraising intelligence, and of course, our producer, Jack Frost. If you like what you heard, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts, the DonorSearch YouTube channel, or wherever you like to listen, and consider giving us a like and a positive review so others can find us as well. Check out our live webinars and webcasts on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and come back next Friday for another interview with a leader in the world of social good. Until then, this is Jay Frost. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.